From the Firebird Radio Studio, it's the Authors on Fire podcast with nationally syndicated radio host and producer, Pat Rulo.
Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network, home of the Firebird Book Awards, the Positive Change Podcast Awards Hall of Fame, our newest book song, where we create a unique, one-of-a-kind song just for your book. I am Pat Rulo, and this is the Authors on Fire podcast. And today, I am delighted to have a returning Firebird Book Award-winning author to share with you, Helen Winslow Black, author of Songs My Mother Taught Me, the companion to her debut novel, Seven Blackbirds. Helen is a writer, humorist, and mother of five whose work explores resilience, family, and the ways women find their voice. She has a master's in art history from the University of Chicago, and she also admits to a law degree and a stint as a PhD student in philosophy. And I had the opportunity to produce her audiobook, Seven Blackbirds, where Helen did the stellar narration. And I have to say, I had the best time getting to know her and her talent. I know you're all going to enjoy this. Helen, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Pat. It's delightful to be here. I've got my cup of coffee and I'm ready to rock and roll.
You are delightful. I was looking forward to this all week. Well, listen, congratulations on the recent Firebird Book Award wins. My favorite for you was the best book club pick.
Isn't that nice?
Yes.
Isn't that nice? Let's trumpet that from the housetops. I love book clubs, Pat. I just love book clubs because, you know, a writer wants to actually reach out and communicate with people. And I've guested at book clubs and it's always been a huge pleasure. Mm-hmm. I really appreciated that category.
I was happy about it too, because I read your book as well, getting in preparation for the audiobook work that I'm going to do with you. And I was happy because there's a lot to pick apart in that. And hopefully today we'll just dance around some of those thoughts so we can entice folks. But before we delve into your book, I read a statement on your blog website where you say the question is not why do women write, but who are they writing for? And you say the answer is why women write is who they are writing for. So there's a lot of goodies to unpack in that. I want to hear just a little about that because it says a lot about you and your writing.
Yes. You know, women write for women. That's not to say that I don't write for men too. And men have read and enjoyed my books. But there's a certain way that women interact and talk and work on things together. And when I write, I feel like I'm having a conversation with other women. And yeah, I'll start with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you do get that feeling when you read your books. It almost feels personal.
Gosh, I put so much in that book, Pat, didn't I? I put family issues, sibling issues, mother-daughter issues, work-life balance issues for women, relationship issues. I just really wanted to put it all in there and make it really real so that I would feel, so that I felt like I'm having a conversation with people. When you read that book, I was having a conversation with you. You know, I don't know about you, but sometimes when I read books, I talk back to the author. sometimes I'm going, what? Why did you do that? Or sometimes I'm like, yes. and women have issues and concerns and lives that are in many ways different from men's. There's overlap there, but in many ways different from men's. And I want to spotlight that.
Right, right. I've not yelled and shouted at a book. I've done that at the TV, but I may have to start. Thank you for permission to do that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Oh my gosh. Well, now in both of your books, you follow Kim on her journey after leaving an abusive marriage. What drew you to explore the afterword rather than the actual abuse itself?
I wanted to write a book that didn't focus on wah, 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 cue the tiny violins, look at this woman in this sorry situation. I wanted to write a book about how somebody would deal with extricating herself from that and what kind of inner resources were required and could she come up with them. There's the afterword to me, Pat, is much more interesting because I do not want to diminish the difficulties of walking out the door with a baby in your arms or showing up at a lawyer's office to file for divorce. I don't want to diminish the huge steps those are. But what's more interesting to me is how does she manage to do this ongoing? How does she surmount the obstacles that are involved? What happens after the divorce filing or the walking out the door? That's the meat of the situation to me, Pat. That allows you to explore the growth of the character, her spiritual growth, her emotional growth, how she works through the obstacles that she's facing, which many readers face and as well in different ways, shapes, and forms. So it's relatable.
Yes, it is relatable, and it also gives hope. It adds that extra layer of, oh, wow, look what is possible on the other side of all of this.
She did it, and you can do it too. You know,
exactly.
That was, I really wanted to write an upbeat book of resilience.
Right. Yes. Well, maybe give us a peek, just to, you don't have to go into too many spoilers here, but just to give our listeners an idea of what they might find when they read your book.
Seven Blackbirds deals with Kim when she's a brand new young mother and her marriage goes sour with the birth of this baby. And she realizes he turns abusive and she realizes she has to get out of it. And so it's the story. It's a twin strand story of her going through the sausage grinder of the legal process, but also her spiritual and emotional and psychological recovery and leaving an abusive marriage. I left this book open-ended, Pat, as you know, we recorded it together, but I left it open-ended because I really liked this character. She grew up a lot during the course of the book. I was delighted to see that. And I didn't, I thought I might want to return to her. I didn't know exactly what was going to happen in her life after that, but I did leave it open-ended. There was no knight in shining armor riding in at the end to swoop her up. There was no specific thing. She simply stood on the threshold of a new life. So Songs My Mother Taught Me is the companion volume to this, and I'm so, so pleased that they're both Firebird Award-winning novels. Pat, thank you so much to you and the team for that. But it's a companion volume. You can read it after, you can read it before, you can read them in any order. I wanted to see what is this protagonist going to do as she moves forward in life. Is she going to fall down again? Is she going to make good choices? What will happen if, and we all know, we've all been around the block, life throws all kinds of stuff at you. You know, things come in out of left field. You know, life is very mixed up in many ways. What is this woman going to do when she is faced again with very challenging circumstances, even if they are of a different nature? Because this keys in on the spiritual growth. If you can heal and mature and grow in the way that I thought she did in the first book, then you carry that with you, and you ought to be able to bring that to bear on your further life. So Songs My Mother Taught Me goes, follows her through her remarriage. She has more children. The marriage is successful. She has a wonderful relationship with her sister. They live close together. They're raising their families kind of together. She's trying to figure out, how do I also get in some work of my own besides raising the kids? How do I support my husband? Because right now we're a, single career family, but I also want to work. What, I have a difficult relationship with my mother. How does this impact things? So there's all that stuff that we just talked about earlier, about all this stuff packed in about what a woman's life is like. And so things do happen for her. And the interesting thing, Pat, is, wow, I'm really talking a long time, aren't I?
Oh, you're good.
The interesting thing, Pat, is that whereas in the first book, she was younger. She was kind of a do-it-yourselfer, mm-hmm. I'm going to do this on my own, right? Which I think is something typical of younger people. When she is older, when she's got the family, the husband, the mother to watch out for, trying to pursue a legal career, she's got a lot more on her plate, Pat. And as an older person, also understanding better the wisdom of the elders, she really relies on the women in her family to help her and guide her through this. So she guides herself, but they're there for her. So I thought that was the interesting difference that I discovered as I was writing the book, because when you sit down to write, you don't know what's going to happen. And I was very delighted to discover that not only did she make good choices, but when the stuff hit the fan again later on in life, she really realized that, no man is an island, no woman is an island. And she relied on, she turned to the women in her family for their, to help her get through this challenging time. So I thought that was rather lovely.
It is. And it reminds me of the chapter, what was it? Three cellists.
On the verge of a nervous breakdown.
Exactly.
Hey, let's talk about chapter titles. I love my chapter titles. and I also won a little nod for best chapter titles, didn't I?
That's
yes.
Right. I forgot.
Three women on the verge of a, and of course that's taken from a movie. I love to crib titles from books and movies and songs. Three women on the verge of a nervous breakdown, which is a very funny Pedro Almodovar movie. Right. But that, yes, that was fun. That was really, that had in it, Pat, one of the most difficult moments. One mm-hmm. of the most difficult moments in yes. the book. Mm-hmm. Yet, I laid it out and I set it up. There was a lot of humor, in it. There was a lot of humor in it because, you just can't hit people over the head with sad things or difficult things. Life is, it's all mixed up together and there are funny moments too. And so I really tried to set up that scene with a very light hand so that when this pivotal, sad moment for this lovely woman occurred, it just kind of gently dropped in and you could really see it. There wasn't a whole lot of fluff and bother around it.
Exactly. I loved that chapter. That brought the women together. It showed compassion. And you mentioned humor. I want to talk about humor for a moment because sure. I find you to be humorous, not overtly or in your face comedy, but highly nuanced, which I just so appreciate that. Mm. And you mentioned being an accidental humorist. So I wonder, how does humor emerge in your life and your work? And why do you think it resonates with readers?
I'm going to address them backwards. I think humor resonates with readers because it's real, right? Mm-hmm. It's very, not everybody can be a comedian, right? When you, and I'm not saying I am, but I'm just using this as an analogy, Pat. When you watch a comedian, not everybody can do that and make you get it and make it funny. Humor is very real. You can't fake humor. It would be like a lead balloon. So if you can inject humor or lightheartedness or a little funny squibbits into your writing, it makes it all the more real, because we all know that's life. It's funny and sad and all mixed up together. You know, the most horrible thing is happening at a family conference in the living room, and then some two-year-old streaks through with a bucket on his head. I mean, it's all there. So I think it's very real, and I believe that that is why it resonates with readers, and it makes them become even more invested in the narrative. And I honestly do not know where my humor came from. It popped out of me after I finished the first book. I just started writing funny articles, and it was like I was channeling my inner vaudevillian or something. It just came out, and it got a really good reception. And I don't know. It's my Scots Irish heritage. I have no idea, but I think, Pat, that in order to be funny, I'm not blowing my own horn here, but in order to be funny, you have to be smart. And in order to be funny, you have to have the, the wisdom of detachment, the objectivity, right? And when you have that, it's like you're putting a kaleidoscope up to somebody's eyes, and you're just slightly turning it to shift the picture. And sometimes you can do that with other things besides humor, but sometimes you can do that with humor and people are like, oh, you know, and I just, it just bubbles up from inside me, Pat. I was a quiet little girl. and I really think it helps, because I often write about very sensitive, delicate, you know, emotional and psychological topics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's interesting, because you've got these difficult themes in your novel, and then when you inject the humorous or a little bit of humor aspect to it, or the humor tones, it has to be balanced and it has to be well done. It's just not something you just pop in there, because then it almost comes from out of the blue. So yeah, that's interesting that you have to somehow figure out how to balance that. Is that a challenge for you, or does that just kind of flow naturally as well?
I think it flows naturally. Uh-huh. I think I have a natural sense of rhythm and balance. And thank you for using the word balance. I could have just tut up for the last 5 minutes and used that word, because that's, you nailed it. That's what it is. It's about balance. Mm-hmm. And life is about balance. You know, you can't walk around all the time being Miss Gloom and Doom. You know, you have to take a break every once in a while, you know, get a latte, watch a funny TikTok. And it's the same thing with writing, like you said, about the delicate subjects. It's about balance. Thank you for saying that word. Yes.
Oh, welcome. I also want to talk about your settings, because Seattle and Tulsa both appear as vivid settings. And I want to tell you this. I want to tell you how impactful your first book, Seven Blackbirds, was for me. And it became more so as I listened and worked on your audio narration. Because now whenever I hear the word Tulsa, or I even see it, I am taken back to your book.
Wow.
Yes. Well, if I see or someone says Tulsa, I think of Seven Blackbirds and Kim and Nathan, and I go there. And then that's just kind of funny. How important is a strong sense of place to your storytelling?
Yes. Thank you so much for telling me that, Pat. That's a real affirmation. I think along the same line as we've been talking about making things real. I have to be grounded in a place. I think grounding the reader with the place it really allows them to kind of sit back and settle in and curl up with the book and feel like they're transported somewhere else, and they're really in something, you know, somewhere else. I personally do not like books that are what I would call skeletal. They have a lot of plot and some conversation, but I'm like, tell me what the bar looks like. You know, don't just relate the conversation, but like, what did the bartender look like, and what was the setting, and you know, was his mouth drooping on one side? Did he have a world weary look in his eye? I want some details, because I think that's, you know, the plot is the skeleton, and the setting is maybe the clothing. I think it's really important to have that sense of place. And as I started out to say at first, it really grounds you and makes things real when you're dealing with a difficult topic. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep. Yes.
So many of your readers are mothers or have navigated life-changing challenges. What message or feeling do you hope they take away from both books, Seven Blackbirds and Songs My Mother Taught Me?
Courage takes guts, but it's worth it.
Ah. Hmm.
You can do more than you. You can do more than you think. You can do it. Whatever it is. I mean, it is different for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We're all on a journey, Pat. You know, we pop into the world and we walk along this path and we have our obstacles to overcome and our joys to find, you know, and our sadnesses to deal with. And you know, bravery will get you everywhere. It will get you to wonderful places, and you have it inside you, and let it out and see what happens.
Yeah. Yes. Sometimes it's just a mindset change. Yes. We could choose to perceive anything in any fashion. And so after a while, it's like, all right, I'm tired of feeling this way, or having things go this way. Let me just change my mind, change my perception, mm-hmm. and take a different path. And so, yeah, I think both of your books give the reader the courage. It allows them to say, hey, I can do this too. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes.
Maybe a bit of wisdom here. If you could give one piece of advice to aspiring writers juggling family and career and creativity as you have, you've been there. Anything you would share, any ideas or advice you would give?
I would say to writers, I would say the most important thing is to read, because you can't play the violin unless you get an instrument and practice and listen to records. I mean, you have to, you can't just pick up a pen and write. Well, at least I don't think so. You have to read. You have to belong to the great, you know, tribe of writers, and you're not the only one, and read them. And then I suppose the other thing, and I say that, Pat, now, because I think as we move further into the 21st century, I hope that I'm wrong. I see less reading, because mm-hmm. we're very visual people. Pictures, I mean, not alphabet letters, right. And I want to promote reading. The other thing I would say is that the mind goes where the attention flows, right? That nugget. If you sit around thinking, I don't have time for this, or I'll do it next week, it ain't gonna happen. Mm-hmm. So just take 10 minutes a day and escrow that and set it aside and just write. Who knows? It may turn into 20 or 30. And the last thing I would say is, you have all the time in the world. You know, people like to feel pressured and stressed and busy in this day and age. I don't buy that. It's not a badge of virtue. You don't have to do everything all at once. You don't have to rush around like a chicken with your head cut off. I did manage, Pat, while I was raising five children, I did manage to write, but it took me a long, long time to come out with the first book. I don't resent that. that's okay. Everything happened as it should have happened. And I see so many young people today who just feel so pressured, and I wish I could really bring it home to them. You've got time. You've got all the time in the world. If you set aside a tiny bit of it every day, it will happen. And, you know, it doesn't need to happen fast.
Exactly. And who knows what experiences that are running concurrently with your attempt to write and doing all the other things that you're doing, how that informs your future writing. So everything
is
kind of food.
Yes,
for the
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all part of what you're writing.
So true.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is there a third book coming out?
Yes, there is. And
Yay.
Having just said I write slowly, there is a third book. What I have envisioned is a trilogy.
Okay.
The third book is going to take the story of the children in the family that are in songs my mother taught me and carry their story further, particularly the daughter, because of the daughter Grace, who actually is going to become an opera singer, because the theme I think that runs through these two books and then the third is a woman finding her voice,
mm-hmm.
which I think is such a beautiful thing, you know, because like you're born with that. That's your soul. You're born with that. And then you know, you go through your childhood and your young womanhood, and there's all these outside structures that are kind of telling you or suggesting you should do this, you should be this way, and really finding your own voice is like tapping through to your own identity, and then like manifesting that. That's the coolest thing in the world. And so that's why the third book, I believe, although it will deal with all three of the children. In the aftermath of the events that transpire in the book, as they get older, I really am going to focus on young Grace, because I loved the relationship that she had with her mother, as I loved the relationship that Kim developed with her own mother from book to book. And I'd like to carry that on.
Oh, goody. I can't wait for this. I love this. You clearly have found your voice, my friend.
Thank you, Pat.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was just so happy to read this book and find out about Nathan, because I just grew to love him in the first book. And it was just nice to have him have conversations with Kim as an older child.
Yeah, I was really glad. There were some characters that didn't appear again and some that did. And in the next book, you'll also see some the same people, but also some new ones. I really enjoyed the chapter you're referring to. I so enjoyed that, because that's another wonderful, wonderful moment between a mother and a child that is now old enough almost that you can relate to him on an adult level. And that's such a delicate transition in child rearing. You have to recognize that this person, yes, still a kid, but you know, inside their head and their heart, they are, he's a young man, and I need to meet him where he's at. I need to give him what he needs. I have to think about him and prioritize him in this delicate conversation. This is what's going on in Kim's head as she has this conversation. And I need to put my own selfish needs aside and have this conversation with him for his benefit. Mm-hmm. These are all relationship issues, child rearing issues. I have so much love in my heart, and I have so much wisdom to share. And people read these books and these moments, and they're like, yes, I get it. Me too, they say, you know, and that's to me what it's all about. I'm glad you enjoyed seeing Nathan as a kind of a grown up.
And during that time, it felt fragile. It felt delicate.
Yes. Yeah. The circumstances when you're doing these interpersonal things, they can be so fragile.
Mm-hmm.
And it requires, you know, great inner strength to do the right thing and say the right thing. And I really wanted to show that this character, you know, there, people either loved her or hated her in the first book. Well, no, not that they hated her, but they were like, gosh, why was she so, you know, why did she do that or whatever? But people really had reaction to Kim. And I wanted to take her through further into her life and to see, did she gain this wisdom, and is she able to kind of implement it for the benefit of the next generation?
Exactly.
And I was delighted to see that she could.
Yes, she did well.
Generally speaking, Pat, I like to write upbeat books. So so we kind of knew that that was going to happen. But nevertheless, you know, as an author, I'm just like collaborating with the pen in my hand. And it's like, I'm like, oh, cool. I love this.
With all the characters in your head, right?
Yes, exactly. The crazy lady talking to herself. No, I'm not talking to myself. I just have this whole universe inside my head that is very, very real to me.
Well, if it weren't, you would not be able to basically translate that and put it on a page.
Well, this is true. Yeah, good point.
Yep. All right, my friend, we've talked and danced about here. Anything we missed that you wanted to highlight?
Well, when we were speaking of girls and women finding their voice and making things real and the balance of serious and lighthearted, I did kind of want to say there's a musical theme to these books that runs all the way through. And I think I'm just reflecting on this, Pat, as you asked the question. I think a large part of the reason that I am able to balance that so well is that I grew up as a musician. So I have a very, I've discovered, I have a very keen sense of rhythm, you know, rhythm and balance. And I think that that does help me make it real on the page for the authors. So if there's anybody, any listeners who are musicians or who love music, you're in for a treat, because there's quite a bit of music in both of these books.
I didn't even think about, though, that underlying background of yours and how it comes to light and into play being a musician. I am a musician myself. I studied music. And so now
you play piano, don't you?
I
do. Yes, you have a degree in piano.
I do. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking that maybe this is why your books resonate with me so much.
Cool.
Maybe I keep following this rhythm along with you. This is fascinating. I'm going to have to think about this a little bit more.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that. This is so fun to talk to you. We could do this all day. But maybe as we begin to wrap up, share any contact information where folks can find out more about you and get copies of both books.
The books are available anywhere you can get books online, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the usual culprits, as well as, I believe, and I would like to promote this as an indie author. I don't like people telling me what to do, so I'm very independent, an independent author. And I think that bookshop.org is a collaboration of independent bookstores across the country, I believe. So you can get that anywhere. You can toddle down to your favorite local bookstore and say, I want this book.
Mm-hmm.
And you can reach me. After you read the book, please write to me. My email address on my website, of course, is helen@helenwinslowblack.com. And so that's the other place to go to get information about the books, read reviews. I've got a slew of radio podcast interviews up on it, and editorial reviews. And the website is, and I'll say it and then I'll spell it. Well, it's my name, helenwinslowblack.com. So that's H-E-L-E-N. W-I-N-S-L-O-W, and then black is in the color, helenwinslowblack.com. And I just had the absolute pleasure and privilege of finishing up a series of over two dozen radio and podcast interviews about Seven Blackbirds and the issue of domestic violence recovery, because I did reissue that book this year. And, you know, some of these, Pat, like their drive time radio interviews, and I don't get a clip of it, but the ones, and some of them are longer podcast interviews, 30 minutes or even more. And the ones that I can get my mitts on, I slap them up on my website, and so people can listen to those. And I've got some articles that I've written up there and too. So you can get to know a little bit more about me, because, you know, reading a book is like, you're getting to know the author. So, you know, you may be like, whoa, what's this chick all about? You know, so go on the website and see if these kind of books are your cup of tea, and you can read all about them. And then I would love to hear from you after you do.
Excellent. HelenWinslowBlack.com. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your insights today. Songs My Mother Taught Me is a beautiful continuation of Kim McLean's journey, full of heart and wisdom and moments that make us laugh, and even as we reflect on life's challenges. So for anyone who wants to explore Helen's work further, you can find her books online, her website, including the second edition of Seven Blackbirds, and follow her blog Mother's Day Out as she continues to share her humor and reflections on life. Helen, I can't wait to hear your audio rendition of this book, and I look forward to working with you. Thank you. Thank you so much for today. I so enjoy you.
Thank you, Pat. It's been a real pleasure, and I can't wait to get started on the audiobook with you.